Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Motorists were scraping ice off their windshields West River this morning. Furnaces hummed last night in the east. It's just another April in South Dakota. Eric Helland is the owner and president of Landscape Garden Center. He's here to answer your questions about plants and gardening. So it's time for you to give us a call to ask your question of Eric. You can call 800-524-3604. You can also send me a text at 605-956-7372. That's 956-SDPB. Or you can email us at inthemoment@sdpb.org. All kinds of ways to be part of the conversation. We want to know what you're working on your property right now. How is the April weather impacting you? Eric Helland is reaching us from Sioux Falls. Eric, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on.
So what are you hearing about the April weather and how it's affecting people so far?
Well, it sounds like us living in the southeast part of the state seem to be the lucky ones. We are not experiencing the ice that you were just talking about, and also the snow that's happening up in the northeast.
Right.
So we're just dealing with, I think, cool, cold temps, which is fairly typical, and I'm kind of glad that it's getting out of the way now, and hopefully we can look forward to having a warmer May.
So if you live in Sioux Falls, this was the week to, in some neighborhoods, to take your garbage to the curb, and the city has a project there. They'll come and haul it away. A lot of yard waste and garden stuff and plants and branches, cluttering the boulevards as the city figures out how to move them. Eric, is that encourage people to clean things off too soon, or is now a good time to sort of clean out those beds and backyards?
Yeah, no, the past few weeks have been an excellent time to get rid of all of winter's litter, all of the leaves, because you could really pull back a lot of the excess plant material that has died or kind of crumpled up over itself and pull that off. You'll see some green, shoots of green and stuff like that. And if anybody's done that for the past couple weeks and you're seeing things pop up, I know I've got some of my peonies that are shooting up, almost a foot high. They're not happen to be on the south side, but since everything's been outside and they've been going through these cooler cycles and even the warmer cycles, that really helps the plant to harden off and to withstand these temperature fluctuations.
All right. I was cleaning out fern beds this weekend and wondering, can I take a rake to them and just rake it out and make it easy, or do I have to go in there and clean them by hand? Am I going to damage the fern growth for this spring if I get too rough?
Yeah, I think, I would probably suggest a spring tooth rake, something that's got a little bit of give to it. Most of those fern or those fronds would, probably just fall right off of where they're attached at the base. So I wouldn't think that would be, too damaging. I'm sure since your ferns are probably on the north or the east side of your house.
Right, north, yep.
North side, so I'm guessing they haven't popped up enough. That ground temp is just still so, just not quite warm enough for a lot of things to really take off.
Right. Other plants, foundation plants around the house that are green and growing, should they be covered for the next few days as the weather kind of cools off in the east?
Even wherever anybody's at or kind of the listing, I think a lot of things. Just let everything be. Mother Nature will kind of take care of itself. A lot of these things, we run into it every single year where things get really warm and then they get really cool. Of course, you wouldn't want to be putting any of your annuals out. Those you'd want to hold off. You wouldn't want to be putting any of your vegetables if that ground is still too cool. Mm-hmm. Anything that you're starting to see, I know hostas are starting to wake up and peak up. Some hydrangeas we've noticed. Daylilies and things like that. It's amazing how everything kind of will suspend itself and just kind of hold tight. And it does help when you do get some precipitation, say, even if it's a frost or some rain or a mist that people are experiencing, and then it freezes on there. Well, then that's actually not bad because that helps hold that temperature that internal temp of the plant at a consistent temp, and hopefully doesn't drop down too much further than, you know, below 30 degrees. I think a lot of damage you'll start to see is when you start to see it in the upper 20s, and then for also a extended period of time.
And you can ask your questions of Eric Helland with Landscape Garden Center. Give us a call right now at 800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. Eric, we have an email question for you about saving yellow-topped boxwood. And it's the first spring in a Brookings home, and it's a 2-foot-tall boxwood framing the base of the east-facing sunroom. Pale yellow leaves on top, but green on the bottom for about 1.5 feet or so. Some of these 12 plants have only a few yellowed stems, but others the entire 4 inches or more are yellow. Can the boxwoods be saved? And if so, how?
Yeah, that's very, very typical of a boxwood to actually discolor itself. And they always, what I've noticed is they seem to discolor the closer you get to spring rather than discoloring like in, you know, December or January. And I think they just start to wake up a little bit too early. The best thing in that case is just hold tight, wait until we get into a good, a little bit better, where we know we're not going to be dealing with these crazy temps. And then that would be something that you just want to trim out of there. You might be able to just kind of shake it or brush it off, and then the leaves will fall off. And in some cases, they'll actually even come back and turn green again. Mm. It's just you have to wait and see what damage has occurred, if any.
Okay, so when is time? Does she shear off the yellow leaves and stems, or shear the entire plants?
Yeah, just shear off the yellow. Just shear right off into the green, because once you cut, any type of cutting will initiate more growth.
Okay.
So what you'd want to do is just kind of barely go into wherever it's green, and then that stuff will just start to regenerate.
Is that as a winter kill? Is that the problem there, or how did the damage occur? Or is it not damage? Is it just something that happens?
It's just sometimes I've seen that with a lot of those, you know, like a broadleaf evergreen, where they'll actually kind of discolor themselves a little bit. The chlorophyll kind of goes out of them, and then all of a sudden they'll actually green back up. I used to have some at my house, and they'd do the same thing. I almost think it, because where I had mine, they were experienced a lot of wind, and I think it's just desiccation where it dries out the tips. And that's typically why a lot of plants die, is just because they don't have enough moisture to survive and to be able to carry on the typical functions of a plant, how a plant should work.
All right. You can be part of the conversation here. You can ask Eric your question online about gardening and plants. And this time of year in South Dakota, give us a call at 800-524-3604. A couple of email questions here, Eric, about asparagus and wild asparagus growing in the ditches. Is it safe to eat? Can you transplant it into your garden? And how do you do that?
I'm an expert at eating asparagus.
We're going to leave that one alone.
I think we're probably coming into certain parts where you can actually see the asparagus, and I am the worst at spotting where asparagus is popping up. I've been driving with other people, and all of a sudden, oh, there's some asparagus. They know exactly where to go. They'll pull over, and they'll go out, and they'll clip off the tips and take the fresh asparagus home and cook it up, and typically it's fine. Now, you don't know what is, if anything, has been sprayed in there as far as any type of herbicide, but I'll just make sure everything is washed off very well.
Sure.
If you do want to transplant it, yes, you can. It's just the conditions where the asparagus is growing, they seem to do very well in a ditch. And however and why ever it is, if it's because it's got the soil makeup, I think is what it turns out to be, then what you'd want to do is you'd want to try to replicate that, replicate the soil type, because that's what it's going to want, is to try to mimic as close as possible. And then but you can get, you know, asparagus, barret asparagus plants. and just try it that way. And it'll take a couple of years for you to be able to start to get some good vegetable, or, you know, capable of feeding a family out of there.
How do you replicate soil in a ditch? I mean, what am I looking for?
Yeah, so you'd have to figure out what it is. Usually, I think the asparagus likes to have more of a heavier soil. I'm guessing there, but it's also well drained. It's not something. It's a heavier soil, well drained. I think also you'll look and see, you know, is it on one side of the? Does it warm up? Usually, it's right along. I've always noticed them right along, you know, where there's a grove of trees, and then you have a ditch, and then the road, and that's kind of seems where it's somewhat protected. So you just want to make sure that you have the kind of the same soil composition. And then I don't know if you'd want to, you know, maybe have it and make sure that it's well drained, I guess, would be the next part of that.
Let's talk for a few minutes about our lawns right now and what sort of work needs to be done. I know I have in my yard a garden that we're not planting this year, and it's kind of a mess back there. What do I do for a couple years to sort of restore that garden area to just grass that I can mow and not put a lot of maintenance in for a while?
Okay. Great question. So right now, this is the time of the year where everybody's been putting down a crabgrass preventer to prevent crabgrass from growing. That would be the one thing you would not want to do in this area, because crabgrass preventer will prevent anything from germinating.
Okay.
So make sure that you don't do that. The other thing is to prepare it is basically make sure that it's all leveled and graded off. And then once those soil temperatures, maybe in the next couple weeks, you know, maybe around the middle of May, you could sprinkle some grass seed in there, and we recommend some new lawn starter fertilizer. And then just lightly rake the grass seed in. You don't want that grass to be any, you do basically just rake it so it's in contact with the soil. You do not want to bury the grass seed to where you can't see it. Typically, you know, less than a quarter of an inch will suffice, and then it will start to sprout and grow from there. And then you have an exposed dirt, you're going to start to see some broadleaf weeds pop up, and those, if you can just pluck those out by hand as they pop up, let the grass seed grow up to, you know, 3 to 4 inches, and then you can start mowing it and cutting it down, you know, and probably it'll still look like a seeded lawn within about 6 to 8 weeks, but by the end of the season, you know, by August or whatever, it should have toughened up in order to withstand, you know, walking on it and all of that.
Interesting. We have a few questions about trees, and this one is, they have several apple trees. Some are newer, some are older. Every year another one of the older ones gets sick, in quotation marks, and when we get a good apple crop, most of them from the old trees are inedible due to worms. How can they take better care of the older trees and help ensure more edible apples, and what's good protocol to establish with the newer ones so the same thing doesn't start to happen in a few years? And they live north of Vermilion.
Okay, so depending on, you want to get into a routine of using a fruit tree spray,
okay,
and or a dormant oil spray. It is probably almost too late, because I think a lot of things are blossoming and blooming right now that you would not want to spray. Otherwise, you will damage or actually take any chance of growing any apples at all. So the main thing, that this is what my dad always told me, is go sanitation. Make sure everything is cleaned up that can spread the disease. So any of the old apples have got to be removed. Any of the dead branching has got to be removed. Just because in all of the foliage, any of that stuff that is on the ground, that has to be removed. The dormant oil you could spray on the lawn underneath it, which will help seal up all of the spores that would be the bacteria, you know, where all of the diseases could originate from after you clean everything up. But then there's a fruit tree spray that you can just follow the directions on that, and that's usually carried in any independent garden center, but it tells you exactly what to do before it blooms, right after bud bloom, and then before fruit set. Mm-hmm. And you can follow those, and that'll help prevent you getting those, most likely the apple maggot worm, which is, you know, there's those red sphere balls that some people will get to help to attract to those flies so they don't go to the apples that go to the sphere and then they stick to them.
Okay.
I've noticed some people like to use those. But that's in the short term is basically try to get everything cleaned up. If you can use some dormant oil around the base, because every time it rains, it hits the ground and the splash of the water hitting it, then all of a sudden this cool, damp weather, then you have the diseases that really start to thrive, and then that's what's drifted up into the fruits and any open wounds or anything like that. And so that's what I would try to eliminate there.
Hmm. What about other trees that folks are sort of buying and planting now? Are there new varieties that are popular? What if you're looking at adding a tree to your property or your yard, what sort of questions should you be asking?
Well, the main thing to get anything to grow right is to have the right soil profile, and know, is the soil, is it well drained? So you dig a hole and you pour a bucket of water in there, does it stay in there forever? Hmm. And if you have cases like that, then you want to choose trees that can handle wet feet, or you want trees that can handle very well drained soil. And so those are things that you'd want to know. How big you want the tree, how far away you're going to plant it from a structure. That can be, what size of tree you're going to want to use. And then a lot of people like, they'll say, well, I want a tree that turns red or turns yellow. And so just narrow down those, the different varieties that are possible to use in that particular situation. But finding a tree, it basically, figure out this is the area that I want, but then looking at what kind of soil am I dealing with? Is it a new development? If it's a newer development, you're going to want to, a little bit, a tougher tree that can handle the clay soils, and then just planting it at the correct depth, and then making sure you keep the grass mulch up around the base of the tree, about a 3-4 foot diameter around the trunk to make sure that there's no grass that the tree is competing with. That'll make a huge difference in both any shade tree and evergreen trees.
Hmm. All right. Eric Helland is with Landscape Garden Center in Sioux Falls. Eric, thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you very much.